everybody. Welcome to My Worst Day, and I'm Cassie.
I'm Keegan.
I'm Christina.
Okay, so we are pre-recording in preparation for Christina's wedding slash all of the holidays
that
are coming up.
This is going to be out. Yeah. Right after you got married.
Yeah.
I'll be in
Hawaii. Oh my, congratulations.
Oh my God. It was so beautiful. You looked so stunning. Oh my.
Can you believe
Halle Berry came?
Halle Berry was there.
Listeners, that's an inside joke.
Oh no.
But because this is coming out after your wedding, and we have weddings on the brain right now because we are recording this a week to the day previous to your wedding, I saw an article.
Okay.
And I wanted us to discuss it.
Okay.
Because I think it's interesting to me always whenever there's stuff that's posted on Reddit, the way that people can fall on both sides of it. Because to me, sometimes things look really obvious. And I'm like, well, duh. Like, this is, you know, you are the asshole or you aren't the asshole or whatever. But then there are always people who fall on the opposing side.
Yeah. Weddings are very, I think people have strong opinions about it one way or the other.
Yeah.
I, for instance, at work, somebody else is getting married kind of around the same time. She's actually getting married in the spring. So she just went on her bachelorette weekend thing.
Mm-hmm.
She built a deck for her bridal party with a list of itineraries and a certain lookbook for each one.
The way you could just not invite me.
Wait, one pause. I just want you to know that even though I work 99% of my life, when you said built a deck, I was like, what?
I literally thought a physical, like she was like, out there with a hammer and nails and 2x4s.
And I gotta be honest, I blacked out from that moment.
Yeah.
What did she, so she has an itinerary.
Like she, so it sounds to me like she created like folders for each one of them, like with the itinerary and like a lookbook for the weekend. Look, man.
Listen, I wish I had that kind of time.
Oh, I know.
But
right?
Also, I'm like, dude, people are busy. You want them to go out and get a whole fucking wardrobe for this?
Honey. No.
I better own everything in that lookbook that you want me to put together.
Wow.
Don't have the expectation.
I mean, we kind of had a little bit.
We coordinated.
Okay, so we had like a little bit of a theme-ish for the
For one thing.
One event. And it was the ladies decided we were going to have a special dinner just for Christina.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew we were going to go to a tiki bar that night. Plus, you know, they're in Hawaii and they're honeymoon, all this stuff. So we were like, oh, it'll be fun if we do kind of like a floral, not anything, nobody went.
Kind of island vibes.
It was
just like loosely island vibes. It was like, if you want to buy something, fine, but like you don't have to, just pick something kind of bright in that you already own. Yeah. That's kind of fun.
And everybody did. It was just so simple. It wasn't, there were no lays or anything.
But can you imagine, like, I would never presume to tell you how you should look.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that to me just feels really, and I also wouldn't like, because I'm persnickety like that, I wouldn't like receiving it in return.
Wouldn't like being told. I mean,
We know this group is.
Absolutely never tell me what to do.
Hard pass.
That came up so much because I was still on Facebook whenever I was planning my wedding and we were in those like wedding groups.
Yeah.
And people were so particular about certain things with their bridal parties, especially bridesmaids.
They are people, not accessories.
Right. They're not accessories to your day. And I thought about that a lot.
I don't know. I really do think that some people feel that way.
No, they do. Because I've seen brides who are like, everybody needs to be this size.
Honey.
I want everyone to be between a size 4 and a size 8 or whatever.
Oh, man, I just got kicked out of the wedding.
Like, crazy. Crazy stuff. And I thought about you a lot, Cassie, during that, because there were so many that were like, I'm making my bridesmaids cover up all their tattoos. And I would just be like
fully gloved.
Yeah.
Full gloves.
But just imagine,
oh my God,
like you're asking these people to stand up next to you because they are the most important people to you in your life.
Not.
And you love them
and
as
also,
they are.
They like being in a wedding is a lot of fucking money.
Yeah.
Being a part of the wedding party. I'm like, first of all, how dare you? It's just, I couldn't be like, I'm sorry, I don't.
If you ask me to go on a diet to be in your wedding party, then I don't need to be in your wedding party.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, no, thank you.
No. It's, not that it's not stressful enough to like fit in your dress and do all the things and look a certain way
for something
and feel like you're like showing every person that's in a wedding I feel for the most part, and I'm sure there's exceptions, of course, to this, wants to look good for that person for their wedding. They want to look good. Nobody wants to be like me, who's gained, you know, whatever, however many pounds over COVID. And like, you know, that's just like, so it's such a stressful event anyway. So then to pile on top of it a mandate. Well, honestly, I will tell you right now, if I was told or mandated to do something, listen, the way I would gain 20 pounds by while reading it, just like, oh, guess I can't be in the wedding.
It's ridiculous. But speaking of money, so this Reddit post that I saw, it was a dad who got on Reddit, and it was basically kind of like an am I the asshole situation, where he was saying that he and his wife are well off. And so he has always told his daughter that he will pay for her wedding whenever it was time for her to get married. So she is getting married now. And so she comes to him and she's like, okay, you said you would pay for my wedding. This is what I want. I want a destination wedding in New Zealand that has a total cost of around $200,000. And he says, I don't know what this man does, but he was like, technically we could afford it. He's like, however, I feel like that's way too much money.
Outrageous amount.
And also
that
he's
buys
like
a house in some places.
Yes. And he's like, in addition to that, a lot of our family members don't even have passports. Much of our family
is
not
going to
be able to afford to come anyway. Like, and so I told her no. And so people,
it's his money. He ain't got to do shit.
It's not obligate. I mean, he told her he would pay for her wedding without putting any parameters around it. But I think a $200,000 wedding
is
crazy,
He said he would pay for a wedding, not that wedding. You know what I mean? Like, I just, I think that's way too much. I think.
So his wife and his daughter were not speaking to him. Talking to him. Over it.
Well, at least they're being mature about it.
Yeah. Weddings though really do be bringing out like some strong emotions and weird things from people. We've fielded, cause right now we are like a week away from it, and like all day we're going to be spending, next Thursday just picking up random people from the airport. The way I'm like,
are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
And you don't even live near the airport. Like, other people need to figure it out.
Well, you know, one person can't drive, so can't like rent a car, so or what have you. So like Eric's gonna have to be at LAX at like 11:30 at night.
The night before your rehearsal dinner.
Because we already have people like, you know, helping out and picking up other people throughout the day. But it's just like, are you like, oh my God, just the logistics and stuff like that. That's been the thing that's killing me right now is the itineraries. It's just trying to make sure.
But Uber to a place or just get a shuttle to a hotel nearby. Then the next day, someone pick you up
from there. That makes the most
coordinate.
Not to have somebody be out here at midnight picking you up.
The way I would never
expect it. That's the thing, is like, it's so entitled is the thing. I could never, even if my parents were well off, I could never ask my parents to spend
$200,000.
We paid for our wedding ourselves.
Yeah, first of all, we are too.
Any help that we got, it was offered and graciously accepted. But we paid for it ourselves. I would never expect, even if my family had that kind of money, I would never expect that kind of contribution.
My parents paid pretty much for our wedding. You know, we paid for some of it. But my parents did. But I'll tell you this, the way that I pride myself on my frugality, it just can't be stated enough.
I would feel so bad.
The way that, there's no way my parents spent more than $10,000. Absolutely not. They couldn't have. Because I, the way that I was like pinching pennies on every single thing, even though it wasn't like quote unquote my money. It still was like, I wanted the best deal. I was going for the best. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't care.
Well, and here's,
I just couldn't. I could not. The guilt.
I mean, and I want to be clear about this too. I don't think there's anything wrong. If your parents want to pay for your wedding, sure, and that's the deal that you've made, like, yeah, that's fine. I'm not sitting here,
dude,
trying
I'd
to say,
love it. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Like,
is this jealousy speaking? Sure.
I know.
I'm just saying, like, I don't know. There has to be some, it feels very entitled, yeah, to say, I want the most luxurious, extravagant, at least offer to pay a portion
who
of it.
Wants
you know,
to fly to new, that's like a 23 hour flight.
Yeah.
To go to a wedding. And if, honestly, it'd be different if it was just going to be you and
girl,
like your immediate
honeymoon.
Your immediate family. I could see that if she was
just
like,
a
hey,
handful of people.
Yeah, I want to go to New Zealand. Can like you and mom and the siblings come and like
that's
my
it.
And my partner's parents and siblings. Yeah. And that's it. And have like a small
intimate.
And then just throw a party when you get back, mm-hmm, or whatever. Go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not $200,000.
No.
That is so wild. Yes. Yeah. I can't. Oh my God.
So the follow up to it was that they are looking at venues in New York for 100 to 200 people. So I guess they came to some kind of agreement there. But to stop
that's
talking
still,
to your father.
That still might be $200,000.
Yeah, yeah. And also, like, in this day and age when people are just like struggling, like truly, yeah, struggling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I'm
not
myself,
able to afford their rent or their groceries. Yeah.
Go bankrupt from healthcare.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, $200,000. That's a house payment.
Yeah.
That's like a down payment, yeah, on a house or
that's
a house.
Whole ass house.
A whole ass house.
In certain parts places, of the country, yeah, that's a whole house for sure.
Yeah, I know. My Californian was showing.
Yeah.
$200,000.
You're like, that's just
that's
a down payment.
That's a that's a house payment.
Like,
I was like,
beep,
what?
Beep, 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 boop. Ohio is calling. They're like,
bring, bring, bring.
Hello.
Oh, man.
My gosh. Well, FMK's weddings.
Oh, okay.
What should we do? Famous grooms or brides in movies?
Well, okay. Wedding movies.
Wedding movies.
Okay. We got like The Wedding Singer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Father of the Bride.
My Best Friend's Wedding.
There you go.
There. Oh, okay. Dude,
we, no needs.
No needs. Wow. You came right out with it. Okay. Yeah. Father of the Bride. Are you talking about the
original Steve Martin.
Steve Martin one?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Well,
cool.
I guess not. I don't know if it's the original, but the Steve Martin
yeah,
one.
There's an older one with Elizabeth.
Spencer Tracy too, right?
Yeah. Elizabeth Taylor.
The original from my childhood.
It's been a long time since I've seen that one.
Me too.
It's been a really long time. I don't really remember. Can you give me a synopsis? On it,
I can look it up and give you a sense.
Is it just like he doesn't approve of their?
I don't think that's it at all. I think
it's just
hijinks.
It's hijinks that happen when you're planning a wedding because he's like paying for the wedding and then it's just like dealing with all the craziness that comes with like the family and the wedding and stuff. And
1991, with his oldest daughter's wedding approaching, a father finds himself reluctant to let go.
Oh,
so also some of that, really? But it's very hijinksy and fun.
Okay. And then
extraordinary middle class man whose 21-year-old daughter Annie has decided to marry a man from an upper class family. George can't think of what life would be like without her. He becomes slightly insane, but his wife Nina tries to make him happy for Annie. But when the wedding takes place at their home and a foreign wedding planner takes over the ceremony, George must try to handle the fact that people grow up. So,
yeah, it's got a little daddy's girl vibe to it.
Wouldn't know what that's like. So,
and then you said My Best Friend's Wedding, and then what was the other one?
Wedding Singer.
Wedding Singer.
Okay. We watched My Best Friend's Wedding not that long ago I guess a couple years ago now.
Just
for Patreon.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember when I first watched, like, hating Cameron Diaz. And now that I'm older, I'm like,
No, Julia Roberts is
the villain.
The villain.
Yeah,
for sure.
She's the baddie.
She's the real villain of that movie. Mm-hmm. Also, that's the movie that has the ridiculous, like, if we're 28 and not married, we'll marry each other. She's like, what?
28.
The ripe old age.
Be over.
Yeah.
Life's
old
maid.
I did rewatch Wedding Singer a couple of months ago. Love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
That
stupid movie and great.
Is so fucking funny.
It's great.
Yeah.
I think I'm gonna fuck The Wedding Singer.
Okay. Yeah, it's fun.
It's fun, right? Yeah. You're gonna have a good time.
Yeah, you can't,
I don't want to marry
it. Marry it.
You cannot marry it.
It's a little, it still hasn't got its shit together.
Yeah.
You know? It's gotta grow up a little bit, mature a little bit before you.
And I think I'm going to marry Father of the Bride because I love that kind of hijinks. I like that kind of wackiness. And I love Steve Martin so much. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know it's given daddy's girl stuff, but yeah. But from what I remember the movie, it's cute. Now I don't want to revisit it and find out it's awful. Mm-hmm. So
1991 gives me pause.
I was side eyeing that foreign wedding planner line in that synopsis there. I'm like, what does that mean?
I know. There, I do kind of remember there being kind of like a.
It was like 1991
French or whatever. Like yeah, he's like taking over, and it's very flashy and fabulous. Guy mm-hmm. takes over. Mm-hmm. I think it's played by his friend that's in the show with him. The murder,
Martin Short.
I think it's Martin Short.
Love that.
For some reason, I feel like I remember that. At any rate, I'm marrying it because I feel like I don't know. It's got heart, and I think I'm gonna have to friend my best friend's wedding.
I don't know it's that I even want to.
I know it's just.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It's too much.
I can't.
Like, that movie is so.
I know. It's like a friend I see like once a.
It's
on
a frenemy. It's a frenemy, friend on Facebook. I think. That's the vibe I'm getting. Because Cameron Diaz is really the only one that's like.
Good person.
Redeemable.
Yeah.
And for some reason, they wrote her to be 19, which I'm like, why did they do that?
I forgot about that. Oh my God.
So weird. What a strange movie, actually. Yeah. Upon revisit, this is hard.
Maybe it's because I watched it so recently, because that's why I'm having such a
I know what I'm gonna do.
Okay, you go, please.
I'm going to fuck my best friend's wedding.
Okay,
yeah. I kind of feel the
that
same
frenemy
way.
Vibe that yeah. like
the will they won't
little
they.
Bit
there's
of,
dysfunction there.
Yeah,
it's gonna be good. Plus when he puts that finger
in his mouth
it is. That was a young awakening moment for me, where I was just like, why does that
do
make
things.
Me feel funny? You know,
why am I tingles on the inside?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So it's got a little bit of that in there. So I think sex wise, the sex is going to be good. And you know what? You're going to have to raise him a little bit, but I'm going to marry the wedding singer.
Wow.
Yeah. You are going to have to.
Couldn't be me.
I know.
It couldn't
you're gonna have
not
to,
be me.
To force him to grow up a little bit, but yeah.
He does live in his sister's basement, which is...
Julia Gulia?
Julia Gulia! But, you know, I might do the same thing. I just there is
how
something,
do you have the patience?
You're absolutely right. Ugh. But there is just something about that, like, I'm getting... And again, I haven't seen Father of the Bride in a while, but I'm getting very white, suburban Connecticut...
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're
vibes.
Right. You're not. You're not wrong.
You know,
I feel like you're
like,
right.
I just don't know that I would love that.
Right.
For me in a marriage situation. And certainly that is not a fuckable.
No.
Movie.
No.
I don't know. Steve Martin.
Steve Martin is.
I think he's fuckable. Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
There we go.
I'd take it for a ride. Sure. Yeah.
He's a grandzaddy.
Be very careful not to break it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, back then he was more of a just zaddy.
Yeah. But yeah, I feel like a marriage between us would always feel like I'm faking it in that family.
Yeah.
So it's not going to work for me. But I'll friend it for sure. I would love to friend Father of the Bride. I think I'm going to do the same thing as you, Christina. Yep. I think I'm going to fuck my best friend's wedding. We don't have to talk about it later. All of them are so hot. Every person in that movie. Yes.
Wedding singer makes more sense to fuck because he's line cook summer.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, but you can't marry best friend's wedding.
You cannot marry
best
friend's
wedding. There's like too much like miscommunication.
Oh, yeah.
No. Backstabbing.
Hate it.
Well, I mean, when we watched that movie, we were like, this marriage between Cameron Diaz and... Dermot Mulroney is going to last like 2 years.
In common. She's going to grow up because she's 19. She's going to get a couple years under her and be like, what the fuck am I doing? We don't have anything in common.
Well, and he almost left me for
his friend.
For his friend during
our
wedding planning process.
That's not a way to start a marriage.
So you can't marry that, you know, but very attractive people all around in that cast. And I will never call any of them again because, you know.
No.
No.
But I know it's going to take some patience.
He's got potential.
But he has potential. Oh, no. I can fix him.
Oh, no. You guys.
I can fix Adam Sandler.
Cassie's not mad. She's like, just disappointed.
Exactly right. Don't listen. Don't call mature. Me unless you want to hear I told you so. Okay. That's just where I'm coming from.
Cassie's going to be sitting in her house in her colonial crocheting. In Connecticut. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Rocking in my rocking chair.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
My cellular phone to you ladies being like, oh, it's not working out, huh?
Oh, that's too bad.
Can't believe it. So he hasn't had a job, huh?
Broke boyfriend energy.
So he still doesn't have a job.
Look, he's a good... He's a good songwriter.
Wow.
He knows Billy Idol by the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Like maybe his music career is just about to take off.
Yeah.
I just have to believe in him. Getting in on the ground floor.
Yep. Oh man. Wow.
Learned nothing.
Wow. Yeah. My gosh.
Yeah.
No. I was thinking because when you started saying wedding movies, I was like, oh, what are some other wedding movies?
Uh-huh.
Steel Magnolias. Technically a wedding
runaway
movie.
Bride.
Yeah.
Runaway Bride.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wedding Planner.
Oh, which I saw in theaters.
Wow.
J-Lo and Matthew McConaughey.
Wow.
Will I make you guys watch that for a Tainted
Yoinks.
Love?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Oh,
you know what movie I was thinking about doing for Tainted Love too is The Other Woman, which I have. I don't know why we have not watched that movie yet.
Is speaking of Cameron Diaz. Yeah, Cameron Diaz and Kate Upton.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. So good. Mm. Oh, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. What other wedding movies?
Yeah, because I was like, oh, what else like could we do like a round two or
well,
something
I feel like
that?
Is brutal. I feel like Jennifer Lopez has been in 8,000 wedding
well,
movies.
Well, so has Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
I've seen those women in wedding dresses over and over. Because she was just in Marry Me with Owen Wilson.
Oh, God, that movie.
Too.
Did you watch it?
Trifling. It was awful. Oh, my God. Listen, when I say you have to watch it, you have to watch it.
Yeah.
But is it fucking awful?
Of course it is. We were expecting nothing less.
Is it the best kind of awful? No. Hallmark is the best kind of awful. This is...
Just awful?
It's... Actually, it is the best kind of awful. It's the kind of awful where you talk about it with your friends and you're like, what the fuck did I just
sit through?
Jesus.
It sounds like a group movie. Like
it does.
Like that you put on and you watch in a group.
Absolutely.
You're drinking wine, you're eating popcorn.
The next wine night with the ladies.
Should we put it on when we spend the night together before the wedding?
Oh my God, yes.
Yes.
We are having a girls' sleepover in Christina's hotel room, bridal suite, the night before the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we are going to watch Marry Me. That sounds...
I'll bring popcorn.
Perfection.
Wow. Popcorn.
Everybody bring a bottle.
Yep. Yep. We're doing it.
I love that.
We'll have eye patches.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I have extras in case anybody needs more.
Excellent.
Oh, man.
Well, you guys want to take five and then we'll come back with stories?
Sounds good.
Yes. And we're back. Okay. I'm going to kick us off with stories since I have the Tainted Love this week. I met who I thought was a really great guy online, and after texting each other for 2 weeks, we finally met in person. He picked me up, and I had an awesome time with him, and we decided to go back to his place. This is where the fun starts. As we're nearing his place, there's almost no one else on the road when all of a sudden, this other car comes out of nowhere, cuts us off, and apparently everyone knew each other and had some kind of major beef with each other.
What?
You're driving on like an empty street. A car comes out of nowhere, fucking cuts you off.
No.
Terrifying.
Jeepers creepers.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Don't like that.
Jeepers creepers.
That's right.
No.
He throws his car in park. I don't like that.
Absolutely not.
And I do a Yui and get the fuck out of there.
Yeah. Breaks out the tire iron from his back seat.
Sir.
Oh my God.
There's three guys trying to get at the guy I'm with.
What?
Fists are flying. People are bleeding. I still have no idea what the fuck is going on. Fucking scary.
This is a date.
Yes. A first date.
No.
He gets out of the car with a
he
tire
out
iron.
Of the car with a tire. And
I'm running into a cornfield.
Yeah. SOS, if that's the first like thing that you think to do is to reach into the back seat and get
when
a tire.
When you have somebody like basically a stranger in your passenger seat.
Yeah. I mean, and what kind of beef do you have? Because it sounds like they were waiting for him on this street, right?
Oh,
so
God.
What's happening there? We go back to his house and he immediately wakes up his parents who come out. It's like 3 a.m. now. This is still our first date.
What?
So now I am also meeting his whole ass family.
No.
After this dramatic evening.
The way I'm just drop me off at that police station right there. Thanks.
Thank you. Goodbye. I'll call an Uber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cops show up. They don't arrest him, but tell him he needs to come down to the station with his parents. There's a discussion amongst all of them. His dad agrees that he will personally drive him to the police station after they swing through my date's methadone clinic first. As soon as it opens.
Wait, what?
Yes. And then he drops my date off at the police department and drives me home. It was a very awkward car ride. Back with my date's father that I had just met. Can
so,
you imagine? Like,
Mr.
you had a lovely,
Anderson,
a lovely like, evening with this guy.
What?
And then on the way back, all of that happens.
That's too much.
You're so lucky that nothing worse happened.
Yeah, you're lucky that nothing worse happened. B, now you know.
Now at least you know a lot.
You know a lot.
Honestly, like maybe it would be a terrifying, traumatic experience, but maybe a blessing in disguise. Because if the first date went well and he was able to hide that shit from you and you kept going on dates with him
and you were
down the road, you discover all of this shit.
Yeah. Listen, and it's awesome if you're in recovery and everything like
that,
but I definitely applaud that. But
I think that there's a lot of rules about dating while you're in recovery,
though.
And I think those are in place for everyone involved.
Yep.
The person in recovery, the person who's dating you, your family, everything.
Yeah. Like, sounds like you still got a lot of things to take care of.
He's
before
got healing.
Hopping on plenty of fish and matching with people.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, oh my God.
What's going on there?
Yikes on bikes.
And you're really lucky that it was just fists and a tire iron, honestly.
Yeah,
and not guns. Had a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody's got guns in America.
In America. Well, I wonder where this person's from.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's not
Canada.
America.
Yes.
That's true. Canada.
The
Australia.
UK. Yeah. Yeah. Anywhere else.
Yeah. Literally anywhere in the world. Yeah. Okay. So this person says, never made it to the date.
Oh.
It was a short-lived Tinder match. His location was our city, but he told me he actually lived 2 hours north in a resort town as a seasonal employee. He told me he was a high-up exec at a company.
And you only have to be there.
The way Cassie's already like, bullshit. Okay.
And you only have to be there seasonally. Yep.
Cool.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Okay, like, I don't know.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
He told me he likes to paint watercolors in his spare time.
Oh, that's
nice.
Yeah. Solid job. Watercolors. I was willing to overlook the initial lie about not being close because he seemed like such a sweetheart. And hey, I can take a day trip up to the mountains. We matched on a Saturday, and the Monday after we matched was crazy busy at my job. So I couldn't check my phone for a few hours.
Here we go.
I had 24 texts from him.
That's too many.
That's
24. That's too many.
Including a dick pic.
No.
Followed by a picture of him crying.
No. What? You guys.
That's amazing.
People are fucking unhinged.
What is wrong with you?
First of all, just a dick pic is just like, whoa, or whatever. Yeah. But then follow it immediately. Like the next picture is
also,
like,
who
crying?
Takes a selfie
of them
themselves crying?
Crying?
Like, look,
so
we've all
extra.
Been there where we've looked in the mirror while we're crying.
Oh,
self-indulgent moment.
Yes, when you're
know?
Crying so hard.
And you're like,
and
look how bright my eyes are right now.
And you like look at yourself in the mirror, but I would never think to take a fucking selfie. And being like, I need to preserve this and share it.
And share it out with this woman. Asking what he did wrong. And did I not like his body?
Holy
shit. Oh my God. Oh my God.
I told him.
Shit.
I was working because it's a Monday.
Can you imagine opening that in the office? Like opening a dick pic
I would throw my phone. I would throw my phone.
What if your boss was walking behind you like at that moment?
God. I would throw my phone. I just know I would. It would be my natural.
So I said I was sorry I couldn't reply. He sent me some pictures of his artwork. And what initially struck me as odd was they were all really good. but also vastly different styles. Because
they weren't his artwork.
Beautiful manga art, followed by a nature painting that would have brought a tear to Bob Ross's
Do
eye.
Do you think I'm stupid? Do you think I'm stupid?
Seriously. Followed by a startlingly realistic portrait of a woman in a raincoat.
Okay. Huh.
But that portrait of a woman in the raincoat looked familiar.
Yeah, we're doing a reverse image search.
I found the post again and on Tumblr and confirmed the artist was a woman and not my Tinder match.
Huh. Interesting.
Another reverse Google image search found the original sources of everything he'd sent me. He had simply cropped signatures off of artwork he found on Pinterest.
What the fuck?
When I confronted him about it, he told me I misunderstood. See, he never wanted me to think it was his art. It was art that inspired him.
Okay.
So he didn't lie.
Of course, yes.
But it got me curious. So I Googled the fancy resort he told me he was an uppity up in.
Bullshit.
The resort had a company directory on their website, and I found him immediately as a janitor. Now, nothing
wrong with sanitation
right. workers, but he would message me with things like, ugh, these shareholder meetings are killing me.
I got a shareholder meeting in the bathroom.
Someone took a shareholder and stole two. That fucking shit.
Literally,
I read that line. I fucking died. Shareholder meetings are killing me. Or I hate when the board needs me to look at something.
The board's like, can you say look at bathroom on level 3?
Exactly.
On the third floor?
I finally told him that I'd caught him in too many lies to move forward with anything and to stop messaging me.
It makes me sad because I'm just like, how much do you hate your life that you feel like you need to lie about every aspect
and
of it?
What is the end game?
Yeah. What do you think? Like, it's, I guess maybe the one time when he can feel important or something. Like, why would you do that? And it can never go beyond
it can never,
just being on Tinder.
Exactly. You've now limited it because it's like, there's nothing wrong, like she said, with being a janitor or whatever. It's just like,
at least you have a job.
Just be honest.
Or just also, there's nothing wrong with liking art, but not being able to draw a hyper-realistic woman in a raincoat.
I also can't.
I can't either.
That.
But
you can appreciate art. You You're like, absolutely right.
Exactly.
And not be an artist.
Correct. And one is not like better than the other.
That's right.
It's just one is honest, and then the other is being a liar. So he called
shareholder
me.
Shareholder meetings are killing me.
The board needed me to look at this.
Look at this stuff. Very not specific. Just incredibly vague.
Exactly. Boom, bust, bear market. Stocks.
He bonds. Called me sobbing.
Something profit.
And told me he only lied because he wanted to impress me and that he never meant to hurt my feelings.
Honey.
And that he loved me.
Nope. Babe,
and we're out.
You need to get therapy. No.
Goodbye.
I hung up and never spoke to him again. All of this happened in 5 days.
No, that's too... Wow.
I love you. I love you.
I love you. I love you.
Yeah, I have a big job at the...
I have a big seasonal job.
I have a seasonal job where I have to deal with shareholders.
Wow.
Okay.
Cool.
He watched one too many episodes of Succession.
Yeah.
He's like, this is my life now. Kendall Roy is my hero.
Absolutely.
He's like, I just hate wearing this suit to work.
Oh my God.
Okay. All right.
So...
I went on a date at the start of this year with a guy from Tinder. He had newly moved here to Scotland from Spain. So after talking for a while online, we agreed to meet. We met at Starbucks in Glasgow, for coffee. I thought he was pretty handsome. And although he struggled to understand my accent at first, things got easier after about an hour.
She's Scottish and he's Spanish?
He is Scottish and he is from South America.
Oh, okay.
Or South Africa.
Got it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, Scottish accent and...
Oh, no, he's from Spain. You're right.
Okay. And then Spain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Okay.
So We then went for a walk beside the River Clyde when I casually asked him if he had many previous boyfriends, to which he his reply was, "Oh, I'm not gay." I asked him if he was bisexual. He said, "No." I asked him,
"Do you know that this is a date?"
I asked him if he was curious about men. He said, "No." So I asked him if he was straight. And then he just said, "Yes." I said to him, "Why are you matching with men on Tinder then?" He told me since he had just moved to a new country, he wanted to meet new people.
Honey,
Bumble has a friend thing.
It's not the way you do it.
In total shock, I explained to him that Tinder is a dating app. And he said to me, "But you never asked if I was gay." And I told him I wouldn't think to since it wasn't talking to a man on a dating app.
Sweetie.
So wait. Do all the men I've matched with think I'm gay?
Yes, they do.
He asked, shocked, and I confirmed to him that's true since Tinder is a dating app. Yes. So anyway, things were now very awkward, and after a strange conversation about the attractiveness or not of Scottish women, I left and we never spoke again.
You're gay. You're like, I guess she's pretty.
I can objectively say that she's got all the parts and the places that are supposed to be there. But other people would have been mad at having their time wasted. But I thought the situation was absolutely hilarious. Going on a date with a straight guy seems like the kind of thing that would only happen to me or in a very sitcom.
I actually love that. I wish they had ended up being friends.
Me too. I kind of would have.
That you know what
like
I mean?
The beginning of a beautiful friendship. There's something really endearing about that kind
that's
of just
so
like,
wholesome.
It's wholesome.
That he's like, wait, so everybody that I've matched with, all these guys think I'm gay?
Yes,
sir. You're on a hookup app, sir.
But he wasn't trying to lead them on or anything.
No,
he genuinely just didn't know. Clueless. Like, just didn't know.
Like, a great way to meet friends.
Sweetheart.
Oh, baby.
I get that too. You're in a new country. You're just trying to make friends.
Note to self. Don't go on Tinder. Oh man.
Well, I gotta go deal with some shareholders.
Yeah.
So you guys wanna take five. Come back with the tainted love.
That is 100% now how I'm gonna say I have to go to the bathroom. Oh, and we're back, Keegan.
That was so confusing. I almost said it, and we made it was.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I have the tainted love this week, and I got a lot of my information on a Crimes That Shook Australia episode.
Ooh.
That is available on YouTube. I'll put the YouTube link with the rest of my sources on the website. This was one of those, there's like a bunch of sources, which sometimes is helpful and sometimes is so it just makes
it's
it
overwhelming.
So much harder
to
like take notes and stuff. So I'm going to do my best here. I feel like I was very unfocused when I was writing my notes because I was just like bouncing between articles.
Yeah.
You know,
you're like, but this says this. Mm-hmm. I hate when that happens. I had that happen to my story too.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if you guys will know about this, but it is a pretty famous case in Australia.
Okay.
Okay. In 1995, Anu Singh and Joe Cinque, I had to write that out phonetically because it doesn't look like it's pronounced that way.
Right.
It is. So Anu Singh and Joe Cinque met at a nightclub in Newcastle in Australia. And at the time, Anu was studying law at Australian National University, which I also think is funny because anytime they showed clips of like the university, it's ANU, which is how you spell her name. Mm-hmm. So,
oh wow,
Anu was attending
ANU.
Yeah,
wow,
in Canberra. But the two hit it off so well that they decided to start a long distance relationship. Joe Cinque was born in Newcastle in 1971 to Italian immigrant parents. Joe was described as really outgoing and extroverted. He did well in school, played sports, and seemed to be genuinely liked by all of his classmates. So you can see video footage of him. He was always like quick to give a speech. A lot of people always said that he was kind of the moderator in a lot of situations. He was a very go with the flow, easygoing kind of person.
Okay.
He graduated college with a degree in civil engineering and quickly got a job at a firm in Newcastle. So he was doing really well for himself. He did well in school, got a good job right out of college.
Easygoing guy.
Yeah.
People like him.
Yeah. Feels very 1990s to be able to like leave college and just be like, I got a good job now. Like, you're like, Great. Okay.
Kind of the last time that happened.
Yeah. While Joe was described as fun-loving and easygoing, Anu was described as more serious, confident, and dominant. And these traits actually attracted Joe to her. That often happens, where it's like super easygoing guys like very like strong, confident.
Why are you looking at me like that? I'm just kidding.
I wasn't going to say anything. But yeah, so he was really attracted to her, like both physically and also, you know, she had a lot of traits that he felt like maybe he lacked. She was incredibly smart, really ambitious, with dreams of becoming a lawyer. And so on the surface, they seemed to be really well matched. And in those early days, they seemed to be really happy. A lot of his friends say that their physical chemistry was really off the charts, which of course, like, endeared him to her immediately.
Yeah. Also, like, a weird thing. Can you, you think about that? And like, in our friend group, like, describing, like, oh, that couple has really good physical chemistry.
Yeah. Oh, like, God. I bet they're fucking all the time.
No. I don't want
I don't like
to
that. I don't want to think about that ever.
Ever think about that. Gross.
Not a single couple in our friend group do I want to think about.
Oh, love you all, but
no
thank you.
Absolutely not.
I'll skip out on that. That was one episode of Friends where, like, they all wanted to see, because Rachel and Ross, like, accidentally made a sex tape.
Yeah.
And, like, everybody wanted to watch it.
Never.
No.
And Monica is her. It's his sister. Yeah. I'm like, oh, why are you guys wanting to watch two of your friends bang?
One of them being like blood related.
A sibling.
No, fucking weird.
I'm going to go on record and say,
no,
I'll skip it.
No,
I'll sit this one out.
It's not for me.
Don't invite me.
No.
Okay. So early days, things are going well. Soon, though, Joe's friends and family begin to see some red flags, or maybe more like pink flags, right? Like, in hindsight, red flags, but at the time, just kind of like little things that were throwing them off about Anu and their relationship. So Joe seemed really like head over heels, hopelessly in love and devoted to Anu, but she seemed to be more self-centered in the relationship. Everything was about her. She's one of those people who you would invite over for dinner and they would only talk about themselves, you know? And so she was like talking about, she went to dinner with his friends and she was like going on and on about her ex-boyfriend in front of his friends and Joe.
Not interested.
Which is... Yeah, uncomfy. Joe's parents didn't approve of the relationship between their son and Anu. They thought that she was controlling. They thought that she was rude. Like, she would come over for dinner. And, you know, they're very traditional Italian parents. Mm-hmm. We have dinner at 6 o'clock every night kind of thing. He calls home every week kind of thing. Whenever he's, at this point, he's still living with them, but... So she comes over for dinner and dad is trying to talk to Joe, and multiple times she'll come up and like interrupt and start kissing his neck and stuff, which is just don't love it.
No,
just don't love it. And especially for their culture, they were like, that's so rude.
Yeah.
And she would also do things like call while they were eating dinner. They had dinner at 6 o'clock every night and she would call at like 6:20, 6:30. And Joe would get up from the table and go answer the phone. And so eventually the mom like took the phone and was like, hey, we have dinner at 6 every night. Can you call at 7? And then you guys can talk all night. But like, stop calling. Like, because it felt controlling. Like, she was doing it intentionally to interrupt dinner. Or that's how
it felt to
they
the
felt. Yeah. Right. And
they probably weren't wrong. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's hard to say how much of their dislike for Anu is hindsight and how much of it. Maybe they were annoyed at the time, but of course, hindsight's 2020.
Yeah.
So after about a year of dating, the distance was starting to get to the couple. Anu in particular began telling Joe that if the relationship was going to continue, he would need to make the 400 kilometer, which is about 250 miles, move from Newcastle to Canberra to be with her. She's like, I'm done.
Got a good job.
Yeah. Got a good job. Got a good family life.
Well, she moved.
Well, because she's going to school. Right. She's going to law school.
That's right.
So in Canberra. So she's like, if you want to be with me, you need
to. Seems like it didn't work out.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. I think we just call it.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. But he's head over heels in love with her. So he's okay. I'm going to move. His family and friends obviously did not approve of this. But he went ahead and relocated and moved in with Anu. So not long after moving in with Anu, issues start creeping up in the relationship. You know, it's easy to have those rose-colored glasses whenever you are living far away. You only see each other in person however often. Mm-hmm. But when you are cohabitating with someone and you're seeing them day in and day out, those little things that kind of got on your nerves before are now a major part of your relationship.
Right.
So she is controlling. She's also... she's very demanding. She needs him.
How does she have time for this?
Yeah.
At law
school.
You were
in school.
Yeah. But she's one of those people who like always needs you to tell them how great they are all the time.
I don't have time for that.
So
shit.
She's like, she needs him to constantly be validating her.
Oh, honey, and you got to find that inside yourself. Right.
Yeah. Oof. And there's a lot of attention seeking behavior, a lot of domineering behavior. She's just one of those people who seemed dramatic for no reason. And like even people in school would say that it's just like that was just kind of her personality. There always needed to be some kind of drama happening. So even though she's
I've met these people.
Yeah
But she's brilliant. Like she is an incredibly smart student and she's doing very, very well in law school. Her behavior, though, was really strange and erratic, and it was starting to affect her life, not only with Joe but also at school. Her mental health also during this time clearly is starting to spiral. She's really hyper fixated. She's got like really bad body dysmorphia. She's very hyper fixated on her appearance. She develops a pretty severe eating disorder during this time. Yeah. And she expresses that she feels like she has all of these illnesses. Like she feels like, she says that she feels like her insides are rotting. At one point she says with no evidence that she thinks she has AIDS.
Oh my God.
Like she's just kind of spiraling, and she's talking a lot about her body at one point, and trigger warning, because this is like a really shitty thing to say, but it is something that she did say. She told Joe and friends that she would rather be dead than be fat.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's kind of where she's at. Right. And so she says that during this time, whenever she's going on and on about her body, she told friends that at one point Joe suggested that she take Ipecac to lose weight.
That doesn't sound like from what you've talked about Joe so far, it doesn't seem like.
And his friends say the same thing, that there's no evidence. There's no evidence except for her word that this is something that happened.
And it's out of character.
And it's out of character per everyone
who
knew
knows him. Yeah.
So according to family and friends, a little less than a year into living with Anu, Joe begins to kind of, he doesn't say that he wants to leave the relationship, but he's kind of implying that things aren't great. He's starting to make moves. He bought himself a brand new car. He's just kind of like starting this glow up and maybe distancing himself from Anu a little bit. So they're thinking, he's thinking of moving on from the relationship. He's also talking a lot about her erratic behavior. So they're like, okay, I think he's wrapping his mind around possibly getting out of this.
Yeah. And that's for people that are like super, super hyper fixated like that, like an anxious attachment kind of people, they can pick up on those subtle clues too. They know that they're losing control. Yes. Mm-hmm. They know that they're losing power. And this will become very dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. So Anu's mental health is continuing to deteriorate. And just like you said, even though he's not vocalizing anything, she senses that something is going on. Yep. She fears that he is planning on leaving her. Mm-hmm. She also believes that he is not doing enough to reassure her about her health and her appearance. Like he's like, but there's nothing he could would be enough.
Is there enough?
And there's nothing.
That's exhausting. Yes. That is exhausting to put that on somebody.
Yes.
Yeah.
So at this point, she is working out obsessively as well. So on top of the bulimia, she's also like working out all of the time. And it's just this endless cycle. And then she's like constantly saying that she's sick, but is she making herself sick because she's living this really like unhealthy lifestyle with her eating disorder and everything else? So yeah, regardless, it is around this time that she starts telling people that she wants to end her life. And because of his role in her perception of her deteriorating health and mental health, she is going to take Joe with her.
No.
That she's just like, I'm going to kill myself and I'm going to kill Joe for no... I mean, the reason is so unclear.
If I hear some acquaintance of mine even saying that. 911
Yes. Exactly.
Yes.
You know?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, why isn't... I mean, again, I know we can all say hindsight, but that is alarming.
That's an extreme thing to vocalize and to tell people. Not only what you're going to do to harm yourself, but that you're going to harm somebody else.
Right, yeah.
Then, yeah, I mean, I'm literally in a group text like, okay, so what do we do in here? This situation? Yeah. You know, like at least, at the very least.
Absolutely.
Like, can we get a mental health hold? Do we call the cops? Like, that's
what do we do to get Joe out of this situation as well, you know?
Yeah, she's openly telling people that this is something that she's thinking about doing.
Everyone always is like, you know, I just didn't think that they were serious, you know? I thought they were, like, joking. I'm like, who jokes about that?
Yeah. That's not a joke.
That's a weird joke.
Mm-hmm. It's not a joke.
Yeah. I mean, and clearly she's unwell beyond that, you know? It's, like, also because I can understand that, like, they thought that she's this very dramatic person. She's always been this dramatic person. She over-exaggerates things. So maybe you could convince yourself that, like, oh, she's over-exaggerating. She doesn't really mean it. But it's clear that she's not well as well, you know, which is, like, those two things in combination are dangerous, right? So about 3 months after she starts telling people this, on October 26, 1997, Joe's parents become suspicious when he does not make his usual call home on Sunday night after dinner. He's very consistent about this. Mm-hmm. Same time every Sunday he calls his parents. So they wait a little while. They wait a couple of hours. He still hasn't called. So eventually his mom is like, well, I'm going to call and check on him and see what's going on. So she calls and someone answers the phone. It's not Anu. It's not Joe. And she's like, well, who are you? And they're like, well, who are you? And she's like, I'm Joe's mother. I want to speak to Joe. Mm-hmm. And it is at that point that they tell her that Joe was found dead in the apartment.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm.
So devastated, they drive to Canberra to identify the body. And the interviews with the parents are so sad. Like, you know, it's just it's heartbreaking to see. They drive to Canberra, they identify the body, and they're told at that time that Joe's cause of death was due to a heroin overdose, but that they didn't, but the authorities are telling them that they do not believe that his death was accidental or a suicide.
Oh.
They're like, we believe that this was homicide.
Oh, wow.
Right from the start.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
In the months leading up to Joe's death, Anu was openly telling friends that she had a desire to kill herself and several others, including Joe and some of her doctors.
Jesus.
Police discover that Anu had been researching suicide at the National Library and even took a class on how to successfully inject another person. She also...
No alarm bells, huh?
No, I mean, it's just, you know, academic curiosity, maybe.
Like, what does this have to do with you becoming a lawyer?
Right? Yeah. And also, is that just where? At your local YMCA? Where are you taking that class? Anyway.
The library.
She also inquired to friends and classmates if they knew anyone from whom she could purchase heroin. So they discover all of this.
What?
Right.
I need to take a look at that circle of people. Yeah. I mean, like... That's a lot of of very big statements in the past few months. Like I said, all I can do, you know, when we tell these stories, I'm like, okay, I'll just like put myself in these people's shoes. Like what would I do? What would I say? I'm like, if someone started talking H,
that's not a casual party drug. You know what I mean?
No,
at your local college.
Listen, it is not a party drug at all.
No, it's like, you know, it's college students. So they're like, oh, you got cocaine, you got Molly, you got what?
Yeah,
but like,
yeah.
Someone's
that makes
casually
sense.
Asking about heroin.
Nah.
No. What's that? What's going on?
My Ohio is like, no.
Pass. Yeah. So, as if things couldn't get more bananas, Anu decides that she is going to plan a dinner party.
No.
She tells all the guests at the dinner party that this is a farewell party for herself and Joe. That at the end of the party, she is going to kill Joe
nine,
and then kill herself.
One,
and
or nine,
everybody,
whatever.
000 000. Okay. Yeah, in Australia. So
well, it's New Zealand. Same.
It's Australia.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it might also be New Zealand. I don't know. But I do know that it's 000 from this story.
Yeah.
Anyway. So she plans this dinner party. All of these people show up. They all have dinner together.
Yeah.
Joe, completely clueless. It's at his house. He's at the dinner party.
She says this out loud with her mouth to people.
That's like, part of the invitation.
Like, this is a butternut squash soup with toasted pepitas. And also this is a farewell party because... Yeah.
They knew before coming
over. They know what?
Yeah, because she didn't tell Joe. Joe didn't know. It was taking place in his house.
So everyone that's coming to this motherfucking party is like, wait, what?
And no one tells Joe.
No one.
Nobody tells Joe.
And no one tells the police?
Nobody tells anyone. They all show up.
Why?
And they know that this is what's going to happen. I don't know why. I don't know why. That's the biggest question mark of this story.
That is absolutely because...
right. And because even if you think she's just like, oh, she's faking it, not one person is like, but what if she isn't?
Yeah.
Like, but what if she that isn't?
Literally is
not
my
one person.
Yeah. So after the dinner party, everybody goes home. Good night. Have a good evening. Get home safe. Anu puts a large dose of Rohypnol in Joe's coffee. And then when he is incapacitated, she attempts to inject him with a syringe of heroin. However, the attempt was unsuccessful because Anu had overfilled the syringe and the contents congealed, making it impossible to administer a lethal dose. So Joe wakes up the next morning with no knowledge of what's happened.
Wow.
And he attributes his massive headache to a hangover from the party.
Right.
Not to be deterred, Anu tells several close friends that she had attempted to drug Joe, but was unsuccessful, and therefore they needed to throw...
Are these people in prison right now? Because I am fucking furious.
Yeah, so she tells them, she's like, I tried, it didn't work.
Spit on my mic, I'm so mad.
So this Friday, we're going to have another party.
No!
Party number two.
Electric Boogaloo? Mm-hmm. Like, come on.
And
like,
at this point, there can't be any ambiguity here. It's not like you thought that she was kidding because she literally said,
I tried.
It didn't work. That's why we're having a second party.
What is wrong with these people?
So Anu throws a second party in the home that she shares with Joe. Again, this is all taking place in his apartment. Do you think he wonders?
He's
like, why do we need to have two dinner parties back to back? That's weird. But okay.
I saw him last week.
Yeah. But all right.
And also these friends.
Same friends. I would assume same friends. I would assume she's not inviting a whole new group of people.
You guys, let's try it again.
Yeah. So.
Are they not talking to each other? Like.
I don't know.
At this point, these people are accomplices.
Honestly. Truly. Like, I want all of these people in prison.
Yeah, no one warns him. No one tries to talk Anu down from this, right? So after that party, second party ends. Anu administers the Rohypnol, just like before, in his coffee. And then this time she fills two syringes with heroin, massive doses, and injects them into Joe's system.
Oh my God.
Despite having been given a massive overdose of heroin,
no,
Joe does not die right away. She goes to bed with him, in bed with him, and the next day she wakes up to find that he is still alive, tossing, turning, really sick, very ill.
Yeah.
He clings to life, shaking and throwing up blood for all of Saturday. So she does this Friday night.
You're puking up. Go to a hospital. Mm-hmm.
Well, he might not be able to get himself up, you know, to do that. So like he's throwing up blood all of Saturday, Sunday. So she does this on Friday night, Sunday. She finally calls not the police, but a friend. So she calls a friend. She explains that Joe has overdosed on heroin and she doesn't know what to do. And the friend tells her, you need to call the police. You need to get emergency services as soon as possible. And she says, Anu's like, I can't do that. And the friend's like, well, you need to do it or you're going to be charged with murder. So you need to like call emergency services immediately.
Also, I just... Okay.
Yeah.
Like nothing is,
also,
I'm furious.
Like,
right
I'm
now.
Hanging up with her and I'm calling the police.
Absolutely.
What
to make sure.
With these
what
people?
Is wrong with
it
these people?
It is so bananas. Like it to me is so crazy. Like I would be calling.
Yes.
Because I wouldn't be able to trust that she would do it.
No.
If
correct.
She did it,
she
great,
told me she couldn't.
I know,
I can.
Right. I know I where she lives and this is what you're telling me is happening right now.
Yep.
So I'll call.
Yep.
So finally, by midday on Sunday, October 26th, Anu calls emergency services, but her phone call is elusive and bizarre. She oscillates between being eerily calm and screaming on the phone. The dispatcher keeps trying to get her to tell them where she is, and she gives the wrong address multiple times. Oh. She also tells them that her name is Olivia and keeps them on the phone for 20 minutes before they're finally able to determine her location. So she's obviously trying to stall for time.
Yeah. And I think also it's like, well, I can't get charged then because I did call or whatever, trying to get out of it.
Strange. Wow. When services arrive, they find Joe naked and unconscious, lying on the living room floor. They attempt to get a line into his lungs, but his mouth is full of brown liquid and they have trouble getting the line in. Eventually, they realize that there is no way that they'll be able to revive him, so they load him up into the ambulance and take him to the hospital. And during all this, Anu is hysterical and she begins struggling with officers at the scene when they go to take Joe's body away. Despite the best efforts of emergency services and hospital personnel, Joe passes away that afternoon, and sources differ as to whether or not he died of asphyxiation or cardiac arrest due to the heroin overdose. He was 26 years old.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Immediately, and for obvious reasons, authorities are suspicious of Anu. Outside of her bizarre behavior, Joe was fit, young, no history of drug abuse.
Right.
So they're like, this is weird.
Yeah, you don't just, yeah.
Yeah, you don't just go from not doing any heroin to doing
all of it.
Massive doses, right? Anu's behavior at the station was erratic. She sometimes appeared confused. She was clinging on to officers and asking what happened to Joe. But then upon being questioned, she opened up fairly quickly about the suicide pact that she'd made in which she intended to kill Joe and then herself. And when asked why she didn't follow through with her own suicide, she was unable to provide an answer.
Wow.
Just didn't. Though she was described as hysterical and sobbing by investigators, they recall that at no point did they see any tears. So she's like crying, but it's not
real. Yeah.
Anu was arrested and charged that same day with the murder of Joe Cinque. As police continued their investigation, they soon learned that Anu's plot to kill Joe had been an open secret and that one friend in particular may have been more directly involved in the death. Madhavi Rao was said to have been really taken with Anu Singh. She like followed her around campus like a puppy. She was just like really enamored with Anu. So when Anu told her that she planned to kill Joe, Madhavi was in for whatever reason. She was like, all right, I'll help you with that. No big deal.
Don't love do you that. Guys, but no. No. Would not.
Would never.
Sorry. Me.
So she accompanied Anu to the library to help research suicide and heroin. She purchased the Rohypnol and even invited the majority of the party guests. Like that was her job, to invite the dinner party guests. So given the evidence against both women, they were both charged with murder and were initially set to be tried together in October of 1998 before a legal technicality determined it was necessary to try them separately. Mm. Both women opted for judge-only trials, and when Anu's lawyer was asked why this decision was made in her case, he stated that it was largely due to Anu's personality, that if she had been called to give testimony in her defense, a jury would not find her sympathetic.
Yeah. I don't know that a judge is either, but... Yeah.
The prosecution believed that they had a fairly strong case. I mean, she had told tons of people about her plans. She had admitted to the suicide pact. There was a lot of evidence that not only did she kill Joe, but she planned the act out for months. However, the prosecution lacked any real motive. Like, there was no reason for her to kill Joe. There was no proof that Anu knew that Joe was thinking about moving on. And in fact, he had never actually said those words to anyone. He'd never said, I'm going to leave Anu. Right.
Yeah.
The strongest case that they could make was that Anu believed that Joe had made her sick by telling her to take Ipecac syrup, which she had done at one point, and that she had told police that she needed to kill Joe before she killed herself so that he couldn't stop her from killing herself. So that's the closest they could find to any motive.
Yeah.
The defense's case rested largely on Anu's mental health at the time, claiming diminished responsibility because she was not mentally well. Psychiatrists were split on whether or not Anu's mental health issues were severe enough to claim diminished responsibility. On the one hand, she researched and planned the murder. She procured the drugs necessary to carry out the murder and planned not one but two dinner parties and told people she was planning on killing herself and Joe. On the other hand, psychiatrists for the defense argued that while Anu could not claim insanity because she clearly did know what she was doing, she could claim diminished responsibility because her mental health issues, as well as her personality disorders, she was determined to have had severe borderline personality disorder and narcissistic tendencies, along with severe depression and delusions, prevented her from sound decision making and impaired her judgment to the degree that she could not be held fully responsible.
Yeah.
The judge accepted the defense's argument that Anu was suffering from an abnormality of the mind and found her not guilty of murder, but guilty of manslaughter. She was sentenced.
What a blow to his parents.
She was sentenced. She was sentenced to 10 years imprisonment with 4 years of non-parole period, including time served. So at this point, it was, she'd been, I think the murder happened in 97. It was 99 when this went down. So there's already 2 years.
Wow.
Madhavi Rao was tried separately in late 1999 on charges of murder, manslaughter, attempted murder, and administering a stupefying drug. On the 10th of December, she was found not guilty on all charges against her. That same judge from Anu's trial found that there was reasonable doubt that she had assisted in the attempt and rejected the prosecutor's argument that she had a legal duty of care to Cinque.
Wow.
disagree.
Wow.
Yeah.
You have a duty of care when you know.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, you call somebody. As of 2004, she moved out of Australia and is currently married. So,
wait, where she moved to?
Don't know. Don't know. Would be good to know. The question remains how this crime happened without anyone intervening.
Right. Yeah.
During Anu and Madhavi's trials, many law students who went to ANU testified that they knew of Anu's plans and couldn't give a sufficient explanation as to why they didn't warn Joe or the authorities if they believed that it was possible that a death might occur. Even if they were like, even if it was just Anu, even if it was just the suicide.
Right.
You're not going to tell anybody?
You know that she's dramatic and everything like that. Like, you just, you never know. If someone says something, you know, you can be like, ah, they're probably just kidding. But you can ask them if they're kidding. You can call people. There's stuff that you can do.
You can tell Joe your girlfriend is saying that she wants to kill herself.
Yeah.
Even if you don't say she wants to kill you, like, she's talking about killing herself. Maybe that's information you would want the partner who's cohabitating with her to know, you know. Some of these people even helped lead Anu in the direction of where she could procure the drugs that would eventually end Joe's life. So the Rohypnol and the heroin, they pointed her in the right direction.
Yeah.
One witness did testify that Anu had confided in them that she had said prior to the murder how easy it would be to get off on an insanity defense. She was smart, with a good understanding of both psychology and the law.
Yeah.
And so the question remains, was she faking it or not?
Wow.
Her father testified that Anu had struggled with severe mental illness for a number of years, starting as she entered adolescence. And doctors did agree that she suffered from bulimia, depression, and personality disorders. So it's hard to say. Anu was released on parole in 2001 after serving 4 years. And again, that was with the time previously served. So she was out on bail for a large portion of that. So effectively, she only served about 18 months.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. While in jail, Anu got her master's degree in criminology from Sydney University and went on to obtain a doctorate for her thesis on, quote, offending women toward a greater understanding of women's pathways into and out of crime in Australia. Joe's family has obviously never forgiven her.
Of course.
She's attempted to make amends with his mother, Maria, but Maria has refused to accept any apology.
Don't even come near me.
Don't talk to me.
Don't even breathe the same air as me. Wait. Oh my God.
So Maria has refused to accept the apology and said, quote, what I call you is not your name because you don't deserve a name. I call you the devil because you are the devil. Monster, you have destroyed my family. You killed the most precious thing I had in my life. Mm-hmm. The case remains one of the most talked about cases in Australian history, with a film about the case called Joe Cinque's Consolation releasing in 2016.
Whoa. I don't know what there is to talk about. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Other than like side-eyeing a group of law
students.
That's
the biggest thing, is that like people can't believe that no one came forward. All these people knew. It was like bystander effect to the 10th degree. Like, it's so
insane.
Wild.
Yeah.
That is absolutely bonkers to me.
Can we talk about something else that's bonkers? And that's Anu's eyebrows.
Whoa.
I'm showing. It's some very severely 90s.
It is very. They're plucked.
Aggressive to the eyebrows.
Yeah.
Anyway, not the point, but I did think that you deserved to see that.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Bystander effect, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
see something, say something, just like they tell you at the airport.
This poor guy, he did nothing. Like, that's the hardest thing, is that there really was no real motive. Because people have looked at this case, you know, since, and said, because obviously it was the 90s, and for obvious reason, like, people came down on this whole situation, the amount of time she got, and Anu. But with our understanding of mental health now, there's a lot of articles being written about that. So I understand that part of it. However, if she was struggling with her mental health to this degree and everybody knew it, why did no one step in?
Right. Right.
You know, like. Yeah.
And
yeah.
And how also, is she not a dangerous society now? Like, I mean.
Yeah. Motive wise, I don't understand why there was a struggle either. Because again, it's like, I feel like she picked up on the clues.
She's believed.
Already in a mentally unhealthy place and just snowballed.
Yeah. I think she, whether or not it was true, whether or not they could prove it or she could prove it, I think she believed that she was losing control of the relationship. Mm. And that's what set her off. And, you know, obviously she was also just sick.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whew, man. Wow. Well, what are you guys watching this week?
I finished Follow the House of Usher. Oh my God. That last episode, perfection.
Yeah.
So good.
Really good.
I always want more Mike Flanagan. I'm like, come on. One is not enough. What am I supposed to do with my life now?
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, that speech that Madeline had at the end was just like about capitalism and about just being
a
woman.
Brilliant.
So
it was brilliant.
Good.
Yeah. It was really good. Yeah.
I have not really been watching anything, getting ready for wedding things, but we did manage to sneak in Get Gaudy, which I thought would be more a documentary about John Gotti, who I don't know that much about, but it is actually a documentary about how they got Gotti.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more about like the different teams, like the FBI, the Department of Justice, like all these different people trying to bring cases against him and failing to get him. So it was actually pretty interesting, but I would have rather it have been, because I'm like, what was his childhood like?
Right.
You know, how did we get into the mob?
That's what
you know?
Care about. Yeah, I'm not super interested in mob stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I just, it's not my
either.
Thing.
Yeah.
You know?
But it,
as a kid, maybe more, but yeah.
Yeah.
The thing that fascinated me was it's like New York in the 80s, and it very much like captured that time. And it really made me think of Trump. Like, there's so many similarities. Mm-hmm. And so that is interesting enough alone if you want to take a look at that.
Yeah.
So
take that dive. I have been, I think I said earlier, I've just been in literal like work to school mode. Like, it's been an insane semester. So my evenings are spent back on Hallmark Channel with a cozy mystery.
Love that.
Oh, me man. Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's perfect. It was so funny. I was talking to, because Chris could not care less about a Hallmark movie. But I was at work the other day, and my coworker, he was like, oh, it sounds delightful.
Yeah.
And I'm like, three of the men that I work with were all like, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I would.
Look, the world is a never ending horror show. I feel like if you can find a small corner of the world that's like cozy, comfy, dive right in.
Yeah. I will tell you, like, it needs to be said that there are probably only so many times that the local baker can be the one who finds the dead body. But I, you know, like, you really have to suspend disbelief. Yeah,
it's like when you watch Murder, She Wrote, and you're like, why are there so many murders in this small town? Yeah, like, yeah. Maybe you should move. It seems like the crime rate is disproportionate
through
to the population.
The roof. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I can't believe I ever heard about this town on CNN or something. Oh, wow.
Oh, man. Well, if you guys have something that we should watch, if you have a terrible date story, go to our one-stop shop of a website. It's myworstdatepodcast.com. And we love you so much.
Cheers.